Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Yo, 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 this is Eddie Schumard coming to you live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, in the HeritageRadioNetwork.org studios. This is another Summer of Food episode. So far this summer, we've talked to student farmers in agriculture. We've heard from Shizui out in Colorado on sustainable ranching. We've heard from kids working on school gardens, and even a couple folks riding their bicycles across the country looking at agriculture and the food system and the food movement. Today, I'm talking to Sari Kamen. Hi, Sari.
Hi, Carrie.
Shut up.
Sari is a fellow HRN intern. She's our social media manager. She's also, full disclosure,
yes,
a fellow NYU graduate student in the food studies program. Whoop, whoop.
Whoop, whoop.
Go Violets. Sari recently returned.
Go beef hearts.
Yeah, Sari recently returned from a study abroad trip to Italy. Thanks for coming and talking to us. Thanks for taking your time away from tweeting and tumbling across the interwebs.
Yeah, I was doing some pretty intense tweeting.
So
that's okay. Thank you for having me, Eddie.
What was the program about? Give me like a little description. Like, what was the study abroad to Italy all about?
Well, the name of the course was Italian Cuisine and the Mediterranean Diet, and it's a study abroad program that's offered to the Food Studies Department, the Nutrition Department, and the Public Health Department at NYU. So it had a little something for everyone. Obviously, the Food Studies Department students, I think, were very excited to learn more about the cuisine and how food and culture are integrated in Italy. There were some lectures and interesting things we learned in terms of the nutrition and the diet and the structure of the diet. It was also run by Lisa Sasson, who is the head of the nutrition department at NYU. And we did some interesting explorations into some public health issues as well. But a lot of it was just about eating and drinking. It was grueling academic work.
Right, exactly.
But, we were up to the task.
Booze and food in Italy sounds horrible.
Yeah.
So give us a little background in why you're in the NYU Food Studies program. What drew you to food studies, the academic pursuit of shoving things into our gullets?
Yeah. Well, one, because I'm, just interested in that and good at it. But I started to think about food as more of just a hobby. Several years ago, it had always been a passion for me. And there was a point in my life when I was kind of an out of work actor and struggling and figuring out what I was going to do and taking on a lot of different sort of jobs that were kind of soulless. And one thing I would do for myself was go home and cook. And then I would write about it and create recipes. And that was a really meaningful thing for me to do. And I started thinking more and more about how that's something I could do or just integrate into more of a career. And luckily, at the same time, there was this burgeoning food movement that was happening in New York and around the country. So I started interning for the wonderful, wonderful not-for-profit organization Just Food, and was very interested in exploring the different ways food affects our lives and all of the different ways you can pursue a career, everything from doing policy work to volunteering in food pantries to working with the Red Cross. And I just kind of worked my way around that organization until I understood like the ins and outs. And then I applied to the program at NYU because I wanted to further that study. And I knew for sure that I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but I knew that it had to do with food and it wasn't culinary.
So are you closer now after... How long have you been in the program?
Three semesters. I'm closer and farther each day, I think, that I'm in class, because I both discover more things that I want to do and love, which makes it more and more confusing about what it is that I eventually.
So what are the, some of the things that like you've really come to be passionate about since being in the program?
Well, being here at Heritage Radio Network has been very, very useful in sort of helping me figure out what I think that my strengths are. And a little bit, ironically, I got into the program thinking that I wanted to be like a passionate advocate for inner city schools and food access and food deserts and all of that. But through going through the program, I've you know, a part of me has really, really clicked into the culture of it all and the ways that we talk about food in the media and the way that we think about it and mostly write about it.
Which is interesting when you say it kind of went that way, because I feel like a lot of times I meet students in the program who come in with a really culture-heavy interest and they're passionate in the culture of food, and they end up getting pulled into the system sides, as we call it, which is more of that advocacy, talking about food sovereignty, food access. So it's interesting that you sort of had a, not so much a reversal, but it opened your eyes in a different way, especially coming from that non-profit world.
Yeah, I think, you know, part of it had me being removed from academia for so long that I sort of forgot how romantic it can be to be back in school and writing about it and thinking and exploring and, you know, constantly looking for new ways to talk about things and think about things. There was definitely something that has been extremely appealing to me about that. And maybe because my background in terms of like working with Just Food was more on the system side, I didn't think about the culture side in a career-oriented way. So I think it's all about figuring out where your strengths lie.
True. So where does this trip to Italy fit in? Like what what does
well,
the Mediterranean
diet? Well, full transparency. I mean, when someone says you get to go to Italy to study food, you say yes. I'm broadening horizons, understanding other cultures, of course, getting to taste food in the most authentic way possible. I mean, we'd spent so many hours and days like on farms where they made their own cheese and they made their own pasta and they made their own sauce and then they served it to us. And in addition to just being incredibly delicious, there's something so meaningful and special about that experience of being able to say, you know, this cheese was made from those sheep right over there on those hills.
So, you know, you're kind of teasing us a little bit. Like, give us some of the highlights from the trip in Italy. What were, like, some of the best farms you went to, or, like, the most sort of transformative experiences you had, whether it be in a dining room somewhere, whether it be in one of the lectures? You know,
yeah.
Take us through some of the stuff that you guys did while you were there. And how long were you in Italy?
3 weeks.
Not long enough, though.
No,
right?
Yeah. No, of course not. Yeah, it was, like, an interesting mix of, like, spending our days, you know, visiting farms and having very like immersion heavy experiences and seeing really like how things are made. I mean, whether it was like seeing how ricotta was made and then tasting that ricotta, or, you know, going to a factory and tasting espresso. And then using our evening time to kind of like just get out there and taste things in restaurants and trying to immerse ourselves in the culture. So the juxtaposition of really understanding like the glamorous side of Italy, like versus the agricultural side, was really, really helpful in getting like a true understanding of what Italian food really tastes like and how important it is in their culture. And you know, the first farm we visited was in Radicondoli, which is a small kind of rural area in the Tuscan hills. And it was a farm run by sheep farmers, and they made their own cheese. So, you know, first we met their animals and we got to see their cheese production, and then we were shown a demonstration of how ricotta is actually made. And then we were just given like trays of freshly made cheese, which was ridiculous. And then as we sat together at this table, you know, we just were, it was so intimate and it was so welcoming to be in this person's farm, but also their home and welcomed by their family. And, you know, the mama was there and she was making pasta in front of us, like fresh ricotta pesto filling and like fresh tomato sauce. And we ate it and it was warm and it came out in big bowls and there was carafes of Chianti on the table and the whole family joined us. And there was no separation between host and guest, except that, you know, we didn't have to do the dishes or anything like that. But it was like all of a sudden we were just part of their family and we'd never met these people before, but they were so happy to have us in their homes and so proud and honored to be able to feed us. And it's really just a different mentality. You know, being able to share your food is the greatest gift I think you can both have and receive in Italy, because coming together and like having that experience is so warm and it's so intimate. It was so meaningful, you know, back and forth, that yes, we're eating this incredible food, but it was so much more than that, being right. able to have a meal.
And we've talked before, you know, just you and I, about the Italian table, sort of that concept of, you know, that's something you're supposed to do as a family, as a unit, as a community, is come together around food at a table. Was that a very real sense when you were in Italy?
Yeah, it was, because we got that sense over and over again every single time we went somewhere. And, it, you know, it didn't matter where we were. And sometimes it was restaurants, but most often it was people's homes. And we got to go to a more urban farm, as our teacher described it later on in the trip. And, you know, the difference was this family didn't have a lot of money. They had lost a lot of their farmland due to construction that took place in Italy and, you know, the conversion of farm area into commercial property. So they just weren't this like prosperous farm anymore. And they were really struggling as a family to get by, but they still had chickens and they still had tomatoes. And the mother had some health problems and the son still went to the market every day.
Why did you visit this for? Why was this farm sort of within the program? Like what was that experience supposed to be like for the students visiting from NYU?
I think it was just to understand, you know, like a different side of what agriculture can be to a different kind of family.
More of a subsistence sort of base.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, the most like poignant thing about it is that we received the same reception we had at this like farm that was overflowing and very bountiful, you know, to this farm that was much more scaled down. I wouldn't even call it a farm. It was almost like they lived in kind of a shack and then they had, you know, a vegetable plot, and then they had some chickens and some other animals, but they had so much food for us. And I don't know if they took from themselves for the rest of the week. I don't know what happened, but they had killed chickens, you know, right there at the farm that we ate, or I didn't eat, but most people eat. And just like the whole table was covered in tomatoes. It was like tomatoes for miles. And, you know, I'll never forget how delicious those tomatoes were, because we ate them so simply. And there was cheese that came out, and there was melon and prosciutto, and then bread and just, you know, olive oil and wine. And it was like the most amazing dinner. It was so simple, you know, just, you know, a couple elements, chicken, tomatoes, prosciutto, melon, really. And it was delicious. It was fresh. It was organic. And they were so proud that even though they didn't have much, they could still give us this like incredibly bountiful meal. And the mother, who, you know, I said she was obese, she had health problems, she didn't speak any English. One by one, every one of us went up to her and hugged her. And it looked like there was tears in her eyes. I mean, she was just so happy to meet us and so happy to feed us. And it meant so much to her to like have these young students from America who wanted to know her and wanted to taste her food.
What was the reaction, you know, from the student body, you know, with those in the program? And what was the takeaway? Were people walking away, you know, like looking at this developed nation? You know, we're talking about Italy here. We're not talking about like a developing, you know, small country here. We're talking about, you know, established. It's Italy.
Yeah,
but there's still subsistence farming going on. Was that something that is lost in the romanticism sort of when you think about Italy? Was that a shock to see that still?
Yeah, I mean, I think up until that moment, we had been under a very like idealized notion that, you know, everyone in Italy lives on a farm and it's beautiful and like the Tuscan hills and everything is wonderful and perfect. And they all live in these like sprawling Tuscan homes. And it's like, you know, whatever that movie is, I don't know what it's called.
I think it's called Sprawling Tuscan Homes.
Yeah. Plus romance. So to see that, you know, it was really discouraging, because we had this like false perception that development and corporations and government like are all very pro agriculture, and they like that's the first priority in Italy no matter what. It's like if you have a farm, it's sort of untouchable. So it was a little bit of a reality shock to visit this and understand that they had lost so much because the government decided to put up some you know, malls or, you know, something very sort of like capitalistic and suburban-y up where their farm used to be. And they didn't have any choice. Like, they didn't get to fight back, and they just kind of have to like subsist as they are now and like accept the fact that they have a lot less. And, you know, they got no support at all from their government after their farm was taken away.
Right. Well, we're going to take a quick break on this summer food discussion talking about Italy. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about the Italian countryside, food, the diet, what are the takeaways? So we'll be right back, folks. Stay tuned.
You're listening to R&R by Peels on the heritageradionetwork.org.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world, highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
Hello, kids. We're back talking summer of food with Sari Kamen, NYU Food Studies graduate student, Heritage Radio Network, superb intern of social media.
Esquire.
Dominance dash Esquire.
The first.
What did you learn about the Mediterranean diet and juxtapose it to what you thought you knew about the Mediterranean diet before you went?
Well, the first thing.
In five words.
Wine, olive oil, wine. Wine is part of the Mediterranean diet. So it's actually in the Mediterranean diet food pyramid diagram. So I think the big difference there is that wine is food. It's not just like something that you have with your meal or before your meal. Like, it's part of the meal, and that's sort of non-negotiable. It's considered to be heart healthy, and it's just a really important ingredient in any typical meal, like lunch or dinner there. So we drink it twice a day, sometimes more. But I mean, the key is moderation. And I think that's like the key word of the entire Mediterranean diet, is that food is good and food is love and food is family. But, you know, you're never supposed to actually get drunk. And we had a teacher there named Ian, who told us a story, who's Italian, he grew up in Rome, that his father told him at 15, you know, drink wine, drink it every day, drink as much as you want, but whatever you do, don't get drunk, because it's considered totally embarrassing. And that's just not the point. Like, it's supposed to be like you would eat any other ingredient in your meal and savor it and enjoy it, and certainly not abused. And, you know, they do eat a lot of cheese and they do eat a lot of pasta, but, you know, most Italians are in pretty good shape, and exercise is also part of the Mediterranean diet there. So, you know, I think the big contrast to like the typical American diet is certainly our portions, our portion sizes. We don't eat as food that's necessarily like as fresh and as natural and like, you know, organic driven as them. And we don't really moderate our portion sizes. And we have a lot of like things that we do to retaliate the repercussions of our food, which are like sugar-free diet, that kind of thing, that doesn't really exist so much there. I mean, it does,
talk about it. I mean, when you were out and about in Italy, did you see one sort of obesity? Was that something that was discussed in the classes when you talked about the Mediterranean diet? Because this was sort of a nutrition-heavy study.
Yeah, I mean, the
program.
Only real obesity we encountered was at that farm that I was just talking about, where several of the family members there were obese. And, you know, I really didn't understand why they were obese, and that's certainly not a question you can ask someone, because they talked to us so much about their food and how important it was for them to be eating, you know, organic and natural, and there was just nothing like processed And, you know, they seem to have like a really solid understanding of the Mediterranean diet and were very passionate about it. So, you know, that in that case, it might have just been genetic, or there was like other health problems that contributed to a lack of physical activity. I don't really know. But like overall, I mean, there are issues with obesity. And I think especially in children, that's a problem that's becoming more and more apparent there. And we did see some of that with the children, that it's sort of like the next generation that are being afflicted with it. And I think that's because there's more of, you know, American foods being incorporated into the diets. More of our processed foods are little by little infiltrating. You know, it's different in Italy because they really stick to an Italian diet. Whereas like here in America, especially in New York, we'll eat a different type of cuisine every night. You know, we'll go for sushi one night, Chinese food for one night, Mexican the next. And you really don't see that there. You know, I saw maybe one Chinese restaurant the whole time. And even then it was funny, like the menu was still structured in like a classic Italian way, starting with
premium, second.
Yeah, exactly.
So we totally glossed over this in the beginning. Where exactly were you in Italy?
Mostly in Florence. That's where we're based. We are at the beautiful Villa La Pietra that NYU owns. Which is on the top of a very large hill just outside of Florence. So we also traveled around Tuscany to some small towns and visited farms. And then we had a couple days in Rome and then went down to Campania and visited Pompeii, Naples, and Cilento.
So were you able to sort of experience regional differences or, you know, specific cuisines to each of those locales? Or was it, you know, sort of a general Italian feast the entire time? Were there no real...
Yeah, there's definitely very specific regional cuisines within Italy. I mean, right. It's all Italian food, but there's certain things that are more prominent in other areas and certain dishes that don't exist. Like, for example, in Florence, they eat a lot of this dish called ribollita, which is kind of a bread stew with vegetables in it. And it's really, really tasty, and it's really simple. It's like a bread soup. And ribollita just... You don't see that in the South, and you don't see it in a lot of other regions, but it's on every menu in Tuscany. And a big thing that I think surprised all of us in the class was that in Tuscany, they don't salt their bread. And I think that dates back to the times when Italians were so poor, the country was so poor, they really couldn't afford to use salt to salt their bread. And they've kind of kept that tradition because bread is really it's just a vehicle there to kind of like sop up the sauce of the pastas. You don't sit down and like get a bread basket and olive oil and salt and vinegar and like start eating. I mean, they do put a bread basket down when you sit, but nobody eats it. You know, they just wait.
Right. It's a tool.
It's a tool.
Right.
Yeah. It's a utensil to get like that last good sauce in the bowl after you finish your pasta.
The bastardization that it is at like the Olive Garden.
I don't think I've ever been to the Olive Garden. But I don't think it's... I did not see all-you-can-eat breadsticks.
Right, exactly.
And there was no unlimited...
So what other, like, you just, you know, like, that was... What other surprises? I mean, what biases sort of did you go in there and think, like, oh, I know this is Italian food, or this is Italian cuisine, or this is the Mediterranean diet? And then getting there and seeing the reality where you're like, whoa, that is not at all how it is.
Yeah, I mean... In Tuscany, it was really, really hard to find fresh vegetables. You know, I've spoken about tomatoes, and like I always got tomatoes wherever we went because they were so delicious. And I think that's the number one thing that I really miss being back in the States are those like tomatoes that just you're like, oh, this is what a tomato tastes like. And it sucks to not have that same flavor experience back here. But other than that, like they don't really do salads. Like the salads that I ate were burrata and bread, like panzanella. And so it was really hard to just get like fresh vegetables. And I kind of had this image that everywhere I'd go, there'd be like beautiful arugula with like, you know, Parmesan and there'd be like tons of greens everywhere, but they don't really do raw. I mean, most of the vegetables we saw were like heavy in oil and cooked. So by the end, I think we were all kind of just craving just like a typical old salad.
A typical American salad.
Yeah.
But you are, just so our listeners know, you are a vegetarian, correct?
I eat seafoods.
You eat seafood. So a pescatarian.
I'm right? A pescatarian.
Were there any other like specific dietary restrictions in the group? And was that addressed when talking about the Mediterranean diet?
That's because a loaded question.
We had
someone on the group who was kosher.
Okay.
And he did not eat most of our food.
Well, I mean, maybe more in terms of, were there other vegetarians?
Oh,
were there
okay.
vegans?
There was no vegans. I don't I mean, I guess you could do it, but I almost don't see the point of why you would go. Because
was that discussed at all when they were talking about the Mediterranean diet? We're like, you know, like this is Italian food, and you, if you're a vegan, sorry.
No, I mean, I think that there's like definitely appreciation in Tuscany or in the Mediterranean diet for vegetables. It's like they're at the top of the food pyramid. It's all about eating vegetables and eating whole grains.
But they still use the food pyramid, sort of like we've moved to a plate.
Yeah, I mean, thing, not but, religiously, but,
but
like,
that's like yeah, they showed definitely. You here is the food pyramid of Italian food.
And I think it's like it's just well known. Like it's just right. absorbed. Like most Italians have like an understanding and appreciation for why it's important to eat whole grain pasta as opposed to like the refined flour stuff that we eat here in the States, and you can taste the difference. I mean, the pasta there is amazing. And if, you know, if I thought that I'd had like great pasta before, you know, I totally had my world cracked open.
Do you think you could be put in a box, blindfold, shipped around the world, and still be blindfolded and taste like, you know, do you think you would still have that experience and say, yes, this is it. Italian pasta is better.
I'd like
if you
to
didn't
think
know
so.
You were actually eating Italian pasta.
Like, I mean, I'd like to think that I know whether I know it's from Italy or wherever. I think I could appreciate the quality because there's like the fresh pasta that you're served, like, you know, seconds out when it comes out of the water is like a totally different experience than eating dried pasta from a box. And that, you know, I hate to say it, but like I've worked at a lot of Italian restaurants,
but
too.
But it's not like they don't sell dry pasta in Italy.
No, of course they do. Right. But I'm just saying that like, you can taste the quality. Like I had a bowl of cacio e pepe in Rome where, you know, that's a very typical and traditional dish. And it's just pasta with black pepper and cheese and, you know, some butter or something. And it's like four ingredients. And that was the best pasta I've ever had. And I've had that dish here in the States at, you know, like good Italian restaurants, and it's been really good. But I don't even know why that was so good. It was just the quality of ingredients was like, this is the best pasta I've ever had.
Well, I think sometimes it's like the quality of ingredients, the care to proper technique and execution. And then I also feel like sometimes you get inside like you're in like this romantic, like I'm in Italy, I'm on vacation.
Well,
I'm
sure,
learning
there's something
and,
to that.
And there's, yeah, there's like the tweet. It's like Guinness beer tastes better in the Guinness brewery.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit, but also like you are in. Yeah, there's yeah. a locality. There's like a.
Well, that's also just, you know, freshness.
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 All right. What else can we talk about?
Well, can I give a quick shout out to my mom?
Sure.
Okay. Hi, Kathy.
You have to do it in Italian, though.
Buongiorno.
Any other stories you want to tell our listeners or your mom about your trip in Italy? And, you know, what impact did it leave on you? What are you going to take away from this trip to Italy? Was it just like a great escape, a great sort of lesson in Mediterranean food, a really great adventure? Or were there some really kind of tangible takeaways that are going to influence the rest of your time in the NYU Food Studies program and further into your career? I mean, what's the takeaways from this trip for you?
Well, I just really appreciated the way that food brings family together there and the importance of sitting down and just eating a meal together and that they give you, you know, there's a built-in siesta in Italy for lunch, like all the places, all the shops close. And, you know, it's about 3 hours. And it's just nice. It's like, well, what else do you want to do after you have a big meal and like have some wine? You want to take a nap. And instead, like, you know, we don't get time off to really have a meal at lunch here. If you're working in an office, like generally you sit at your desk and you kind of like shovel food in while you keep sending emails. And yeah, you know, it's just like, it's healthy to do that. Like it's healthy to take time to like digest and taste your food. And that's part of the Mediterranean diet as well. It's just, you know, it's cultural, and I think it makes sense. And, you know, work is important and work has to get done, but it's not necessarily more important than, you know, giving yourself the time you need to just enjoy your food. And it's like those small pleasures in life inform everything else. Like, I think, you know, they're probably more efficient at their jobs after they've had that rest or after they've had that time. And I just feel like, you know.
Sounds like a research paper.
We do have one of
maybe
those.
Maybe not series, yeah.
You made me lose my train of thought. Sorry. Anyway, you know, it's just the importance of family, and people live in their homes until they get married. You know, I'm not necessarily for that, but I appreciate how close the family units are there and how connected they are by their dinner tables. I mean, we had to read this book called Around the Tuscan Table by Carol Cunahan, and it's, I mean, that's where everything happens. You know, it all happens in the kitchen while you're cooking together, drinking wine together, going out in the garden and picking herbs together. We did some cooking at an agroturismo, which is like a kind of like a bed and breakfast slash place where you can take cooking classes there. And we all cooked this meal together. And, you know, my job was really simple. I just went out into the garden and picked rosemary and then made rosemary salt. And other people made little caprese salads, and other people made the pasta, people made bruschetta. And then we all came together, and it's just something so meaningful. And it just doesn't happen very much that, you know, you have that many people sitting around sharing a meal that they all contributed to. And it makes it taste better. It really, really does. And it's healthier to do it that way.
Well, I like all of those takeaways.
Yeah.
It sounds like a really great trip. It sounds like your summer of food was quite spectacular.
It was definitely
informative.
Delicious.
Informative.
Yeah.
Well, guys,
I'm gonna insist on longer lunch breaks from now on.
I like that. I was just going to ask how are you going to how are you bringing all that home?
Yeah, I hope you're listening, Aaron Fairbanks.
I claim none of that. Kids, thank you so much for listening. This has been The Summer Food with Sari Kamen, NYU food studies student, talking about Italy. Go out there, take a long lunch break, have a glass of wine, share it with your boss, get some rest, enjoy life. Thank you, Sari.
Ciao.
Peace.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.